Hello, folks. You are listening to the A Minute to Midnight show from aminutetomidnight.com. And my name is Tony. And today on the show, I have Lynette Zhang returning. And retrospectively, I can say it's a very interesting interview. A lot of great information in there. So I hope that you will enjoy this discussion and get something out of it. I want to offer a very warm welcome to Lynette Zhang back on the A Minute to Midnight show. We had Lynette on a couple of months ago, I suppose it would be. I'm not exactly sure, but it was great and people loved it and we had lots of feedback. And so I'm pretty pleased to have you back today because I think it's a really important time right now that we're facing.
It sure is, Tony, and I'm very happy to be here. Very happy indeed.
Excellent. Thank you. So, where do you see things are at the moment? I sort of got pretty big, you know, warning bells going off in my head about what.
A lot of warning bells. Yeah. Maybe about a month or so ago, I did a piece on The Party Is Over referring to the punch bowl, the emerging market punch bowl. And a couple of weeks ago, I did a piece on potential contagion inside of the emerging market, the currencies that are imploding. And I would be prepared to say that I do believe that contagion is well underway. And it's a little scary because of the global supply chain that, you know, that we've put together, because that's a mechanism that could transmit this throughout the world.
I was just looking yesterday, you mentioned the emerging markets, and from a few days ago, just before the weekend, that this is the 31st of August, but Argentina, the peso, down 52%, Turkish lira down 42%, Brazilian currency down 20%, South African rand down 16%, Indian rupee down 10%, and the Indonesian currency down 8% since December last year. And, of course, that's not mentioning Venezuela, which is, gosh, I wouldn't hate to think where they
That's down about 99%. And here's the thing about that. That's all, I think you're mentioning it, those currencies against the U.S. dollar. But in the meantime, in terms of value, purchasing power value, in April, the dollar broke below 4 cents. Out of the original dollars worth of purchasing power. So that means that it's much worse than just against the dollar, because they're all losing value, their ability to buy things. You know, and that's what people don't understand. So that's, you know, there's a lot of those countries that may not be officially in hyperinflation, but if you're a person on the ground, a boots on the ground, and you're trying to feed your family, it could certainly feel like official hyperinflation to you when you have to buy food.
And it's, yeah, I imagine it would be just terrible in a lot of those countries. You know, I think Venezuela particularly, and maybe Argentina's getting, what, the 60% interest rate in Argentina.
Well, you know, that's kind of a joke, excuse me, in some ways, because the central bank raises the interest that it will pay on debt that they cannot afford to repay, and that is supposed to strengthen the currency from which that debt that's created from that debt. Did that make any sense to you at all?
And it's kind of, so there's this massive interest rate, and it's the opposite from what I think Turkey's doing. They're saying we need to take interest rates down to fight their, inflation. So I don't know.
Right. Because, you know, central banks, we've gotten to a point where there was enough ramp room, like in the U.S., as this whole fiat money game, full debt system was being kicked off. Our central bank here ramped the rates up at one point above 20%. And so ever since then, and this is true on a global basis too, interest rates, you know, that was a global inflation as we were transitioning from a gold standard to a fiat debt standard. That was totally inflationary on a global basis. And ever since then, you can see the global interest rates have just been going down and down and down as they've needed to fund more and more debt and had the world have the ability to maintain those debt payments. That's what really matters, you know, and that's what the currency is based from. So when confidence is lost, like we're seeing in the emerging markets, I mean, really, are you going to trust Argentina to repay its debt, whether they're willing to pay you 60% or 100%? No, you know, but okay, if they still think that has any merit, because the markets are going ho-hum on it, they don't believe it anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I think most people are asleep in the West. You can see all this going on in these other countries, but no one thinks it's going to happen in New Zealand or America or Australia, or, you know, people just are totally asleep to it. And it's really interesting because there was an article, which I haven't got in front of me, but in New Zealand, stuff.co.nz, no, it might have been, I can't remember, Stuff or The Herald or Yahoo or one of them. And one of these economists was saying, well, gold doesn't have any real intrinsic value. And, you know, and I'll only get into it when I see that it's starting to rise, you know, that it's proof that the price of gold is rising, and then I will sell it before it gets to the next high point. But basically, until then, I'm not touching gold, kind of thing, you know? It's just like...
Yeah, stay in the paper.
Yeah.
Stay in the debt. Stay in the digits that are so severely overvalued. You know, I just did a piece last week on just before the crash. And all I really did was take a Wall Street Journal from 1928 and a Wall Street Journal from 1999, and I just pulled out the same language. You always see a transfer from Wall Street to Main Street, where they'll say, oh, and Main Street is participating at the highest levels. And that was true both times. So there's that transfer from Wall Street to Main Street. And you always see lots of easy credit. And you always see this time it's different. Valuations don't matter anymore. And at the end of the day, it is always the public that takes it on the chin.
That was an excellent piece that you did there. In fact, you could even run through a bit of that in here if you want that, because I found it very helpful, actually.
Thank you.
And the charts that you produced in there. So just before we do that, though, I think we should just back on these, you know, some of the countries, just so people realize what is going on with some of these other countries, like Venezuela, for example. They reckon 90% of the people are living in poverty. And out of the 2.3 million Venezuelans that live abroad, 1.6 million of them have fled since 2015. And of course, a lot of them are going to other South American countries which can't afford them to come in, because those same currencies are now struggling as well. So that's, you know, Venezuela, what a disaster. And I know the price of gold up there is in Venezuela, sorry, across there in Venezuela has gone up, I don't know, 3 million% or something in the last 5 years. Yep. Something crazy.
In terms of the currency, yes.
Yeah. But
actually, officially, it's gone up like that since February 7th. Officially.
Wow.
Black market, that's been happening really since for a while after they confiscated gold particularly. But yeah. Exactly, in terms of that currency.
Well, I'm going to ask you a question in a minute about this. But so I'm looking at Argentina, and I can see that in the last, this year, the price of gold in Argentina has gone up like into a hockey stick virtually shape.
Exactly.
Turkey, the same thing is happening. They've got on Monday, inflation rate rising 18% over the last month, and they've got the price of gold going up big time as well. India, well, you know, that's just this yesterday, I think it was, a hit a low for their currency versus the US dollar, and so on. But so the question I want to ask is, we see this gold, you know, gold and silver prices going up in those countries, but is it going up more than the inflation rate? And so, like, my friend Chris, who actually started A Minute to Midnight with me, whenever it was 3 years ago or something, and he said, well, You want to ask Lynette, is the gold and silver actually buying more in those countries, or is it just a figure that doesn't matter when you see a hockey stick because the price of it's going up? Like on the street, does it, somebody that's got no food, how much food in Venezuela can silver buy you or whatever, you know, is it actually transferring into that?
It does absolutely transfer because it's universal money. So what it does is it holds your ability to purchase. Now, availability might also be an issue. If you have paper, availability is a big issue because nobody wants to sell you anything for those pieces of paper. They're losing value so rapidly. But silver, yes. And gold, actually, that's the 10% that are not in abject poverty. Just what do you think they hold? That's what they hold. And so I did studies years ago on what happens to each socioeconomic group through these transitions. And what I discovered is that the group that has the greatest shift in their standard of living are the middle class, because they can't believe that this could possibly happen. And so they leave their wealth vulnerable. Look, you know, the reality is it is happening. But even if you don't believe it, a properly diversified portfolio would protect your wealth. And as far as that guy that says gold, silver has no intrinsic value, well, the paper, he's right. It's because it's just paper. It's just a futures contract. But the physical metal is used across every single avenue of the global economy. So that is actually all intrinsic value. And that, when you're seeing it go up in a hockey stick, that's really the loss of confidence and value in the currency. So yes, when the other income-producing assets, when those wealthy that have held on to their purchasing power through lots of, you know, high-end collectibles, but certainly including gold and silver, now they have the opportunity to go into those other assets that are selling for dirt cheap because they were mortgaged or leveraged. So they actually have the opportunity to expand their wealth base, the wealthy that are prepared for it. If you're poor, well, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, your skill sets are barterable for sure. So any skills that you have for sure, or anything that's physical is barterable. And that's another, you know, group. If you have those skill sets, if you have enough tangibles, you know, alcohol, cigarettes, toilet paper, you know, anything that's physical is barterable. So that's what, wherever you are and whatever you have to work with, there are ways to become prepared for this. And that's what I encourage everybody to do.
Yeah, I'll ask you again towards the end if we have time about the different ways to prepare. And, of course, you're doing things with gardens and ponds and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, all part and parcel of, you know, this whole preparedness thing. But, yeah, maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about that video that you did recently, likening Wall Street in the 1920s to now and so on.
Well, sure. I mean, it was there are always repeatable patterns, and I've even developed a strategy based upon those repeatable patterns. But even if you don't know, you know, everybody learns a little differently. So some people are auditory. They want to hear it. They want to read it in order to see. Others are visual. They like charts and they like graphs. So if we just learn how to recognize those things, and it's just a little bit of training of the ear or training of the eye, and you see those patterns, you know, believe them. So in 1928, that's when the general public, whose income because of the inflation as they were transitioning us from a gold standard to a fiat debt-based standard, they allowed a great deal of inflation. The average income more than tripled, and credit became really easily available. Wall Street, having built this whole system, now you have this public that they're trying to also transition into consumerism, so take on debt, take on debt. Now, all of a sudden, in 1928, the general public starts buying into the stock market just as Wall Street was selling out, taking a profit near the top. Gee, sound familiar? You can actually see that. And when you see that hockey stick pattern where you're going straight up, you know that you are entering, you know, an inflationary bubble. So a lot of that is when you see enough risk having been transferred from the few, from the elite, from the bankers, to the taxpayers, to the public, to those putting their wealth in 401ks, so retirement plans and pension plans, right? And I've shown you a lot of times where these entities like pension managers, mutual fund managers, these are people that work with other people's money. So they take risks and you don't even know that you're taking those risks, but they make these choices. That's the way that they transfer the risk from the few, from the private corporations to the public. They're doing it right at this moment with government bonds that we know we can't pay back. The government is dumping them. Our government is dumping. They're not buying as many, so they're reducing their balance sheet. Globally, we're seeing that happen too. Well, somebody's got to buy them to keep the interest rates low. Let's see who's doing that. Oh, pension plans, mutual funds, retirement accounts. So they're transferring the risk of those bonds, of that debt, to the public. When this blows up, what are you going to do? Nothing. We saw the same exact patterns that happened in 99. Okay, transferring the risk. This is when the derivatives really took off. The Asian, you had three major currency crises in there. The Asian crisis that started with the Thai baht that went around to, I think, about six or seven currencies. And then Russia. And one more, can't remember. But our market, the U.S. market, because it was pumped full of these derivative contracts, and a lot of them were fueled by these sweep programs, which allowed banks to access your deposits and utilize them for their benefit. They approved that in 95. So they gave themselves the tools to create a lot more leverage and push these markets up so that all of the other turmoil in the emerging markets was not visible at different parts of the world. But now we're a whole lot more interconnected. And so when I look at today and Larry Kudlow, who is, you know, a right arm to the president, saying the biggest surprise is the 2018 economic boom done on the back of lots of cheap credit, tax changes, repatriation changes, larger deficits. When I hear things like, you know, you've got greater participation of the public than ever before in history and prices don't matter, it's the same thing. You can hear it, but you can see it in those hockey sticks. Those hockey sticks are not a normal market. That's an indication of where the hyperinflation is being held right now by all that global money printing. Didn't go into the general economies, went into the stock market, into the bond market, into the real estate market. It was used to cover up that transfer of risk from the elite, from the few, to the taxpayers, to the public, to the many. When it becomes too expensive to maintain the charade, they won't anymore. When they've transferred enough risk and they feel that this would be an okay time to do it, they won't anymore. But that's what I see in all of those. It was just, you know, three little periods of time, but I could have shown you more. You know, I just took the most expensive markets in history and made a comparison, and they parallel each other perfectly, verbatim.
So what are the elites? Different? What are the elites doing to protect themselves? Or what are, you know, if they're getting out of this, what are they getting into?
Well, that's a great question. Some of that is hidden, but from what I can see, they are buying a lot of gold. I mean, global central banks have been accumulating gold since 2008 in a very, very large way. And I don't even know that we know all of it. But through PCGS and the ultra rarities, which are collectible coins that can start in the hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars, that's straight up, because it's an easy way to carry a lot of wealth in a small, invisible, movable package, in something that you can actually own outright. And if you needed to leave quickly, I mean, that's something you could take with you. So from what I can see, yeah, they're moving into tangibles, but in certain areas that have been really extremely overbought, like real estate, we see a lot of cracks up at the top, with pricing starting to come down now. I think London's had a big drop. New York, in California, we're seeing that. So we're seeing cracks in both of those tangible areas. And that's where I believe the future opportunity lies. But the undervalued circumstance, which this one I can't exactly prove. It's just, you know, who can afford $1 million for a coin other than a 1%er, other than the elite? But where I find the bargain and what I'm personally are accumulating are the really affordable collectibles. I want to be in collectibles because I believe that we are going to see an overt confiscation. And, you know, I could be right. I could be wrong about that. I mean, time's going to tell. That's not something that's within my control. But I want the kind of gold particularly. I'm not so concerned about silver. And I like silver. I own a lot of silver. But I want the kind of gold that's in the same category as those 1%ers, simply because the most likely outcome is they are either going to be the one to write the laws or have the ability to influence those that write the laws. So I can't afford $1 million for a coin, nor do I want to spend $1 million on a coin. I have other things that needs to go to. But I want to be in that same category, because right now they're so undervalued because of all the messing around with the spot market, that all the manipulation. And so it doesn't matter if I'm right or if I'm wrong, I'm getting them at a huge bargain. And that's what I think we can do. That's what I'm doing for myself. Everybody else got to do what they're comfortable with. But a properly diversified portfolio is not a stock and a bond and an ETF and a mutual fund or a savings account or an annuity. Those are all fiat money products. You need tangibles, real physical tangibles. These are all contracts. You need something that you can own outright. And that's what physical gold and physical silver do for you. You own it outright. It's real money. It's virtually invisible, even though you have possession of it, and it's something that you can move easily with and invisibly with.
Yeah, and it's interesting to watch the prices of those metals, you know, the spot prices coming down, like being knocked down. To be honest, that is, you know, something I've always expected will happen just before the crash. That's one of the things I've been looking for, is when I see the precious metal prices get knocked down big, that's when I think they're going for a fire sale buy just before the crash. And of course, the average person goes, "Oh well, it's going down, so we don't want any." But the the governments and the elites and whatever engineer a collapse in the price so that they can scoop up as much of it as possible just before the crash. That's kind of what I've always expected.
And keep the normal people away from it.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Because they use the price to do that with. That's called perception management. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the more dangerous it gets out there, the harder they have to hammer the price. The other piece of that is that it's really close to the cost to mine. In some cases, it may even be under the cost to mine. So the spot market is really just a paper market. I'm taking advantage of it. They're taking advantage of it. I think your listeners should be taking advantage of it. You know, but that's how they actually do the reset, is a revaluation of the fiat against physical monetary gold. And that's why the central banks are accumulating, because we go through this next crisis. Whoever holds purchasing power, the gold, are those that are going to be in power, hence China, Russia voraciously, Russia especially, voraciously accumulating, voraciously.
Yeah, that is very interesting to see that's going on. So what about China? What's happening there with their economy and with, well, are they still accumulating gold like they were a year or so ago?
Well, they are definitely still accumulating gold, and I don't have this in front of me, so I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that in the first quarter of this year, China's accumulation was, I could be off on this, it's not in front of me, but I believe it was 40% year over year increase. So it's not as fast as Russia, but they are continuing to accumulate. The other thing that I'd want to say about that is I believe it was May 2015 when we saw China's yield curve invert. So the shorter term yields go above the longer term yields for at least for a minute or two. And then China's really been struggling in many ways since then in order to maintain their markets and their economy. I don't think that what's happening right now is helpful with the trade wars as far as their economy is going.
So what, for the average person that isn't really that clued up, what's going on there with this trade war and with Trump and China and so on?
Well, you know, there were a lot of bi and trilateral trade agreements between countries that were made, but it's not just between countries. It was actually transferring power from sovereign nations. So governments are supposed to represent the public. And they really, a lot of these documents gave more power to corporations so that if a government changed a law or a policy or what have you, then a corporation could come in and sue the government. So for me, I've done some work on this. I didn't like a lot of those trade agreements, not primarily because it gave corporations more control than governments that are supposed to represent the public. But now President Trump goes in and he's changing things pretty dramatically in there, but he has a tendency to go in really strong, almost like a bully, almost, maybe yeah. like a bully.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And muscle his way. So right now, all of the tariffs, which means that this is driving prices up. Okay. Now, here's the thing about the trade wars and the price movements and all of that. And I can't really prove it. But what I know is this. The real leaders of this global economy are all the members of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. So that's every Treasury Secretary and every central bank chief. And, you know, they're a pretty close-knit group. So that's who I pay more attention to than anybody else. They meet. They come to conclusions. We've been witnessing global synchronization in this and that and the other thing. In one particular area that I'm going to be talking about soon, global synchronization in inflation. So I would not say, and I can't prove this one way or the other, but it's hard for me to imagine that they're sitting here globally planning and orchestrating how things are going to unfold and then over here, but at the same time, it's you against me, it's you against me. This could be a smokescreen, the you against me, to justify a massive rise in global prices that would push us into a global hyperinflation that would then justify that global crisis and reset and the IMF coming in on their white horse with the SDR and bailing out everybody and taking control.
Interesting that you just said that, because that was kind of my next question, actually. And so, yeah, like people will say, oh, if inflation goes up really big time, then we'll be able to pay off our mortgages because, you know, our mortgage will be $100,000 or whatever, and $100,000 is the price of a loaf of bread, so we can pay off all our mortgages or whatever. But is that actually the way it's going to work? What do you see?
Well,
do you see
for a minute, because those mortgages, if they're fixed rate mortgages, then that is a contract. So even though embedded in that contract is language that gives the lender the ability to modify the contract. And of course, I can't tell you, I could tell you that globally on average, after a planned reset, about 9 months afterwards-ish, is when there is, you'll get a letter from the bank. So the problem is the loss in value of the currency. If you have, because everything's going to reset, and this has to happen while it resets. If you have gold, yes, you're going to easily be able to pay off your mortgage, because regardless of what it does in the terms of the currency, that's how a reset is performed. So you'd kind of do that somewhere between when the reset occurred and or as soon as you got that letter. And so it would be quite cheap to repay that fixed rate debt. Variable rate debt will kill you. But there is a strategy on how that works, because that's exactly the plan that governments use to repay the debt with currencies that have, you know, zero value. So yeah, if you position yourself the way they position themselves, then you're going to have the ability to do that. But it's not going to be real easy.
So,
well, it's not really about you.
So do you think there will be inflation and hyperinflation everywhere first? Or what about deflation? Could they knock everyone on the head first with that? So that therefore you lose your properties because, you know, and then the inflation comes after that? Or do you not think that's... Yeah,
well, you're right, because deflation is one side of the coin. So when the markets implode, that's deflationary. The stock market, the bond market, the real estate market, you know, that's what happened in 2008. So yes, that could certainly, that's why it's so important to have that goal, to have your savings, and you can't do that in paper. So yes, I think it will be deflationary first and a hyper deflation, but there's only one way, one, not two, not a gazillion, one way to fight deflation, and that's with inflation. So they're trying to get ahead of that, but you come to a point where there's just no value left and nobody believes your tools anymore. I think that they're going to try helicopter money. There was an interesting piece that came out recently from the Peter G. Peterson Foundation, Larry Summers, who was an ex-Treasury secretary, and instrumental in getting rid of Glass-Steagall that separated deposit and risk-taking banks, because who needs to do that and allow them to merge? Not my favorite person in the world. But anyway, he wrote an interesting little piece on how profitable for the central banks the QE has been. And so that's what we should do, that and also helicopter money. And also, and a couple of other things, which could give us an indication of the next batch of surprise experiments that may be thrown at the next crisis. But there's nothing that can heal the crisis. It has to reset. It has to, the system has to revalue. Absolutely.
And is the IMF in a position to bail everyone out?
Well, considering the fact that their money is truly made out of thin air, not even based on them growing any debt, and they did test it in 2009, and they've been morphing it into a world reserve currency ever since, yeah, that's a button push. They could liquefy the world with SDRs. And here's the piece that people really need to understand. These things only have value if everybody agrees that they have value. If we don't accept it, if the public doesn't accept it, then it has no value. So it'll only be successful if they can get us to go along. That's the perception management piece. And that's what your work, my work, a lot of other people's work is about, awareness, so that we have choices and that these choices are fair. I mean, don't you want to be fairly paid for your labor? don't you want to have the ability to accumulate wealth so that when you're not able to work anymore, or you want to help a family member, or you want to help your community, you have the availability, the ability to do that, you know, so you can fairly accumulate your wealth. And I don't know, maybe after a lifetime of work, leave a legacy to your children, to your heirs, to the community. I mean, don't we have the right to do that? Mm. What's the value of your work?
Yeah. Yep. That's absolutely fair comment. So what do you think will happen in America? Because at the moment, you know, your currency appears strong compared to everyone else's. And and your stock market looks wonderful. And, you know, and most Americans think the economy is in great shape. Of course, the ones that are awake know that, hang on, something's terribly wrong here. But, yeah, what do you actually see happening as far as over where you are?
Well, you know, I can see a point where we would lose the position of world reserve currency and a lot of dollars through the IMF to come rushing back to our shore. So I unfortunately think that the U.S. will experience a much greater change than probably a lot in the rest of the world, only because of our current, our current status as the world reserve currency. I mean, that's a huge advantage over everybody else, because we're the only, not any more as much, but still we can create from thin air, from debt, the money to repay our loans globally. What happens when that changes? That's what I see. That's what's going to change. We're not used to it. We've been really spoiled. You know?
Yeah.
You can live high on the hog on debt for so long, but at some point you've got to pay the piper. And I think it's pretty much time to pay the piper.
So you think this is going to happen soon, pretty soon over there?
You know, it could happen. Honestly, it could happen anytime. I would think that the changes in the tax laws and the repatriation of all those trillions of dollars coming back will have the ability to keep this stock market appearing boosted, especially since they can do it with leverage through, you know, derivatives. It's a lot cheaper than they can do it by actually buying the stocks. But at the end of the day, even as those corporations pull all that money back from overseas, that's going to have an impact overseas, because what they were funding, short-term loans, they're not funding anymore. So that's going to have an impact. And because we are all so interconnected through our financial systems globally, through all of the banks, I mean, through Deutsche Bank, who is now about to be delisted. You know, Deutsche Bank is the most dangerous bank in the world, according to the IMF, but it's interconnected through every bank, plus all those global value chains. So, you know, in this world of globalization, you'll have a part made here and a part made there and a part made there in different countries around the world, depending on frequently who has the cheapest labor pool, right? But they've also borrowed a lot of debt in terms of dollar. I mean, it's just a big mishmash. It's a big mishmash. So nobody's going to be immune, no matter where it starts, or it's more, will you be ready when it becomes apparent? That's going to be the critical key in here. And we cannot forget that we have many trillions of derivative contracts that will have to be reset, reestablished. Those contracts will have to be changed by the end of 2021 through the IBORs, which are the interbank offer rates on which, you know, mortgages and student loans and cars and derivative contracts are all gauged against. You know, there's a lot of them. any contract that matures after 2021, they have to redo the contract. In some cases, that'd be probably reasonably easy to do. In other cases, more likely almost impossible to do when you've got to get a lot of people to agree 100%. And they will in these in the derivative contracts, according to the ISDA. I mean, is that possible? I don't know. And even if you can, even if you can do the impossible, well, when they change the interest rate against which all these contracts have been created, that changes the value to whoever holds them. So that'd be banks, financial institutions, insurance companies, pension plans, you know, money managers. All of those valuations change. Do they go up? Do they go down? I don't know, but it's going to be quite a violent shift one way or the other. I could be wrong. That's not something that's in my control, but that's what the powers that control that are very concerned about that. And I'd have to agree with them on that. So there's a lot of dangers. I think the U.S. will feel it, you know, quite bad because of our current status as the world reserve currency. As that shifts, we're going to feel that. But I don't think anybody's going to be immune. This is global.
Yeah, agreed. And do you think that what's happening with these emerging markets is like a canary in a coal mine, in a sense, to what's really happening? Is the world going to be Venezuela? And also the other question I think is the Federal Reserve expendable? Will they throw that under the bus, or what do you think will happen?
Well, yes, I do think that the emerging markets, the crisis that's happening, is the canary in the coal mine, but it also might be the domino that then goes on for a global impact. The difference between when we were having the emerging market crisis as we were shifting the pegs back in the 90s and today is how much more leveraged and how much more interconnected we are. So I can't say that it didn't matter then, because it did. I mean, people don't realize, but through long-term capital management, that almost brought the global financial system to its knees at that time. It was just wallpapered over with lots and lots of money from taxpayers and Wall Street. So this time, I don't think that they have the ability to do it because they've used it, you know, they've used up all of those options. So just like they did, they had to create new experimental tools in 2008 when the system actually died. They're going to have to come up, if they need to keep this going longer, then there'll be more experimental tools that won't work, just like the other ones, you know, didn't work. I think what we're going to see on a global basis is that the central banks are probably not quite as independent as they might want us to think that they are. There were changes that happened in the governance back in 2008. And so I think there will be changes moving forward. But remember, you know, what the central banks are trying to engineer is a soft transfer. Whether or not they're going to be able to pull that off, whether or not they even really want to pull that off, that for me is questionable. Mm. But their role is to engineer this shift from the current debt-based system into the digital system, and their goal is to remain in control after they make that shift. And that part is up to us, whether or not they do.
Yeah, I think that is right, that is what they want. They want to remain in control, and they don't want you and I and us average people to be better off under the system. In fact, they want more control than what they have now. And so, that, you know, as I see us, we're moving towards a one world government, new world order and all of that. That's the goal. And in fact, I think they'd like to abolish private property and all of those things if they actually are able to do so.
Yep.
So what do we do, though? You know, like, how do people listening that are going, well, this sounds all terrible, and but what do we practically do? So just let's say the struggling family that can't afford to go and buy gold, or and maybe got a little bit of money, but not a lot. Should they put it into silver, or should they be putting into food, or what would you?
Well, here's my personal mantra. Food, water, energy security, barterability, wealth preservation, and community. I would think that the less you have, the more important community is, although I think community is really critical for everybody. So we're kind of developing this global community. I mean, I'm in Arizona, you're in New Zealand, and that, you know, happens. So that's part of it. But even a more local community, so maybe for your food, maybe you participate in a community garden if you don't have the ability to have a garden yourself. You can also do things with seeds so that even if you don't have room for a garden and you can't get to a community garden, if you run water over seeds for 3 days, now you have green food that you can eat, and that's not very expensive. But silver at, what, 15, 16 bucks an ounce is just, frankly, stupid. It's a stupid price. So if you have a little bit and you can accumulate a little bit of silver, it's still severely undervalued, and it's universally barterable, right? But skill sets. I mean, look, do I want to go lay irrigation? No, I don't want to go lay irrigation. But if I needed to barter that skill set with somebody that needed irrigation laid, I could do it. I know how to do it. So I would say really, you know, focus on skill sets and things that can't be duplicated by computers and artificial intelligence and robots and things like that, because that's barterable. Anything physical. You know, energy, you know, you can have things in the house, you know, maybe a little cooking stove and some lamps or some candles, have a way to filter water, because while you can live without gold and silver, you got to have water to drink. The gold and silver might ensure that you can buy the water, but if you're in a place that you get some good precipitation, you know, accumulate that water, look at the security. So just look at these different pieces. If you can't afford a lot and you've got, and you're living in a house, but you can plant a nasty spiny cactus underneath your window, plant a cactus underneath your window. Nobody's going to want to deal with a cactus to try and break into your house. So,
excellent.
You know, look,
I
yeah,
like
you
that
see,
one.
So, yeah. Oh, and I'll tell you another one. A client of mine who is a CSI told me to never throw out or even recycle any glass. He said, accumulate it. Because if we get to a Mad Max circumstance and you've got people roaming the streets, you then break that glass up and you sprinkle it around the perimeter of your property. So if they try to sneak onto your property, they are likely to get cut and they're likely to go away.
Those are really interesting things that most people wouldn't think of. Excellent
right.
Points. Very good. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, just be creative. Look around and see, where am I the most vulnerable on those things? Food, water, energy, security, barterability. Wealth preservation, that's gold and silver, but barterability is a lot of other things, and community. And just start kind of chipping away, you know, do a little bit here and then move on to the next place where you feel vulnerable. But there are certainly ways that you can get yourself into a better position regardless of your budget. You know, just be creative with it and think about what are people going to need? What can I do to bolster that in myself and in my circumstances so that I can bring value to the table so I can always feed my family or be safer or whatever, you know, whatever you're trying to accomplish. But yeah, those are really important pieces.
And for people that, you know, want to just say people that haven't got any silver or whatever at this time, what would you suggest they do? Would get bullion or get junk silver, or what's the best thing for them to do?
Well, I like a variety of sizes and pieces, and you can do that with things like rounds or bullion silver. You can also do that with junk silver. That might even be probably a cheaper way to do it. A dime is roughly a tenth of an ounce, or 0.075 of an ounce. Quarters, 2.5 times
that.
That's
up to 1964, isn't it? Was it 64
yes,
in America?
Yes, 90% silver.
Yeah, and in New Zealand, 1946 for our, we went away in 46. So anything before 46 in New Zealand has silver. So.
See, that's perfect. And also, if you have any silverware or sterling, anything that's marked sterling silver, so it can be, you know, salt and pepper shakers, or I even have some sterling silver chopsticks that I picked up at a yard sale. You know, that's 92.5% pure. Mexican silver, 925, is 92.5% pure. And so gold and silver, regardless of the form, is monetary at its base. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, what it is. It's monetary at its base. So however you can accumulate, you know, so a lot of people that think they don't have anything, well, maybe they have a bunch of sterling silver jewelry. That'll work. Maybe they have, you know, some sterling silver, you know, picture frames or whatever.
Yep. Okay. That's good. And just start if you haven't already done so. And if you can, it's be the,
please.
Yeah.
Start fast.
Yeah.
Start fast.
So have you got any other things that you think would be important to tell our listeners at the moment that may be helpful?
Well, what I can tell you is that on a global basis, I'm definitely seeing cracks in the lower level of the real estate market and the upper level of the real estate market. And that could also push a lot of things in all of the markets over. I'm just seeing a lot of vulnerabilities. You know, and I think that's a lot of what we do here at ITM is to help people develop those strategies using physical gold and physical silver based upon what your circumstances are, what your goals are. So I think first we should all take a look at what are we trying to accomplish, whether that's to preserve our current standard of living and or to grow our wealth base and or to leave a legacy and or any combination. And then from that should really guide you in what you need to accumulate. And then a lot of what we do and a lot of what the YouTube, we put out the YouTube videos every week, is to help you understand where we are in the cycle and therefore how to use what you have. You know, I'm not a short-term trader. I'm not going to go in and say, ooh, you're going to get gains of this and gains of that, because that's in nominal fiat money terms. And while that may be appropriate in certain times of the market, what we're talking about is a complete reboot and restructure and reset of the global financial system, because the debt-based system is dead. It doesn't work anymore. And they have to shift us into a new system, which, if they have their druthers, will be purely digital, which will give them a whole lot more control, governments, more taxing, easier taxing ability, right? To both tax you and take the taxes from you, right?
Yes.
And corporations, it'll give you an easier ability for them to get you to shop, whether you really want to or not. And then if the IMF has their druthers, all your wealth is held in these little tokens that aren't even tangible, making it easier to spend, so that you end up volunteering all of the wealth that you've accumulated and you don't even realize it. So now, no more private property, except for a certain few.
Yes, yeah, that's right. And they get to the top, the sociopaths and so on. seem to be the ones that gravitate to the top, unfortunately.
Because they make the rules and they know what they're doing and they're accumulating gold and silver. You should too. I mean, do what the smartest guys in the room on any given topic are doing for themselves. That's why listening to the newspapers or reading the newspapers, listening to the news, you know, what they're saying and then looking at the patterns, that tells you what those guys are doing. That shows you what they know in just a little listen, a quick glance. Ah. And then what are they doing for themselves? Emulate them. That's what I'm doing.
Good point. So you mentioned your YouTube channel. It would be a good time to tell the listeners your website and your YouTube channel so that they can go and hunt them out.
Oh, absolutely. So it's our website is itmtrading.com, and then it's YouTube/itmtrading. And that's we publish at least 3 videos every week. And it's all about education. We are super keen on education. I have a whole team full of very bright, team members. I mean, we're all precious metals consultants, and we work together to help clients and to help people really develop that strategy that supports their goals and their best interest, because we're also trying to teach you how to fish for yourself so that nobody can pull the wool over your eyes.
And that's a great strategy. And, of course, you were there when the 1987 stock market collapse happened and things as well. So it's not like you haven't been, you know the patterns, don't you, really?
Yes. Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. I'm definitely an artist, and that's what I pay attention to. And when I see a pattern shift, I know that it means something. I may not necessarily know precisely what that means, but it tells me that we have evolved. It tells me that something has changed. And I've looked at them long enough to know, and I've been seeing a lot of them really since last October. The pattern shifts have really sped up on a lot of different levels. And that tells me that we are likely pretty close to a break. I can't tell you exactly the moment, but I can tell you it looks very close to me.
Yeah, so get ready as quickly as people can and be prepared. Yeah, well, thank you, Lynette, for being on the show. Again, this has been a lot in this, and hopefully I think it's the kind of show people could listen to twice and get something out of
Maybe 3 times.
Yeah, there's so much in there. And then go and watch your videos because they're definitely worth it. And I want to say, big thanks for being on the show. And gosh, I hope it's not the last time and that we get a chance to have you back again before before the collapse happens.
Well, I'd love to come back again. And one of these days we may just do it live in your neck of the woods.
Oh, that would be great. Okay. So, cheers. And we'll catch you again soon.
Thank you so much. Be safe. Bye-bye.
Bye. Folks, don't forget to like and share this video. And if you aren't already subscribed to our YouTube channel, I suggest that you do so. And also visit our website, aminutetomidnight.com, with midnight spelled MIDNITE. And you'll find all of our shows there in audio and video format. And you can find them on YouTube and iTunes as well. And we do have a community forum on our website too, which you may want to join. Particularly as censorship starts coming down in other areas, hopefully we can continue speaking there with some freedom. So that's aminutetomidnight.com, and we do run A Minute to Midnight 100% by donations, and I want to say thank you to the people that do donate, and you can do that on our website as well. There are some options there for donating to A Minute to Midnight. So thank you, folks. And all the music is written, played, and recorded by me. And you'll find some free music on our website too. And there's also a link to some page with sound effects packs as well. And I think that's probably it for this show. We will be back with another show in a few days' time. Until then, God bless, stay safe, and have a great week. Until the next show, this is Tony signing out.